The precessing controls and triple verniers were remoted to the driver's instrument board, with one voice control for the widget, all others manual. If any of our voices said, "Gay Deceiver, take us home," car and passengers would instantly return to Snug Harbor. I trust my pop. He brought us home safe twice, doing it with no failsafes and no dead man switch. The latter paralleled the take us home voice order, was normally clamped closed and covered, but could be uncovered and held in a fist closed. There were other failsafes for temperature, pressure, air, radar collision course, and other dangers. If we wound up inside a star or planet, none of this could save us. But it is easy to prove that the chances of falling downstairs and breaking your neck are enormously higher than the chance of co-occupying space with other matter in our native universe. Space is plentiful. Mass is scarce. We hoped that this would be true of other universes. No way ahead of time to check on the number of the beast spaces. But the cowards never started and the weaklings died on the way. None of us ever mentioned not trying to travel the universes. Besides, our home planet had turned unfriendly. We didn't discuss black hats, but we all knew that they were still there, and that we remained alive by lying doggo and letting the world think we were dead. We ate breakfast better each morning after hearing Gay Deceiver offer null report on news retrievals. Zebediah, I am fairly certain, had given up his cousin for dead. I feel sure Zebediah would have gone to Sumatra to follow a lost hope, were it not that he had acquired a wife and a prospective child. I missed my next period. So did Hilda. Our men toasted our not-yet-bulging bellies. Hilda and I smugly resolved to be good girls, yes, sir, and careful. Hilda joined my morning toning up, and the men joined us the first time they caught us at it. Zebediah did not need it, but seemed to enjoy it. Pop brought his waistline down 5 centimeters in 1 week. Shortly after that toast, Zebediah pressure-tested Gay Deceiver's shell. 4 atmospheres inside her and a pressure gauge sticking out through a fitting in her shell. There being little we could do while our space-time rover was sealed, we knocked off early. "Swim, anybody?" I asked. Snug Harbor doesn't have a city-type pool, and a mountain stream is too cold. Pop had fixed that when he concealed our spring. Overflow was piped underground to a clump of bushes and thereby created a natural mountain rivulet that passed near the house. Then Pop had made use of a huge fallen boulder, plus biggish ones, to create a pool, one that filled and spilled. He had done work with pigments in concrete to make this look like an accident of water flow. This makes Pop sound like Paul Bunyan. Pop could have built Snug Harbor with his own hands. But Spanish-speaking labor from Nogales built the underground and assembled the prefab shell of the cabin. An air crane fetched parts and materials from an Albuquerque engineering company Jane had bought for Pop through a front, lawyers in Dallas. The company's manager drove the air crane himself, having had it impressed on him that this was for a rich client of the law firm and that it would be prudent to do the job and forget it. Pop bossed the work in Tex-Mex with help from his secretary, me, Spanish being one language I had picked for my doctorate. Laborers and mechanics never got a chance to pinpoint where they were, but they were well-paid, well-fed, comfortably housed in prefabs brought in by crane, and the back-breaking labor was done by power. Who cares what loco gringos do? 2 pilots had to know where we were building, but they homed in on a radar beacon that is no longer there. Blokes in black hats had nothing to do with this secrecy. It was jungle caution I had learned from Mama. Never let the revenuers know anything. Pay cash, keep your lips closed, put nothing through banks that does not appear later in tax returns, pay taxes greater than your apparent standard of living, and declare income accordingly. We had been audited 3 times since Mama died. Each time the government returned a small overpayment. I was building a reputation of being stupid and honest. My inquiry of, "Swim, anybody?" was greeted with silence. Then Pop said,
"Zeb, your wife is too energetic. Dee Dee, later the water will be warmer and the trees will give us shade. Then we can walk slowly down to the pool. Zeb?
I agree, Jake. I need to conserve ergs.
Nap?
I don't have the energy to take one. What were you saying this morning about re-engineering the system?
Aunt Hilda looked startled. I thought Miss Gay Deceiver was already engineered. Are you thinking of changing everything?
Take it easy, Sharpie darling. Gay Deceiver is finished. A few things to stow that have been weighed, and their moment arms calculated.
I could have told her. In the course of figuring what could be stowed in every nook and cranny, and what that would do to Gay's balance, I had discovered that my husband had a highly illegal laser cannon. I said nothing, merely included its mass and distance from optimum center of weight in my calculations. I sometimes wonder which of us is the outlaw, Zebediah or me. Most males have an unhealthy tendency to obey laws, but that concealed L cannon made me wonder.
Why not leave well enough alone? Aunt Hilda demanded. Jacob and God know I'm happy here, but you all know why we should not stay here longer than we must.
We weren't talking about Gay Deceiver. Jake and I were discussing re-engineering the solar system.
The solar system? What's wrong with it the way it is?
Lots of things,
Zebediah told Aunt Hilda.
It's untidy. Real estate going to waste. This tired old planet is crowded and sort of worn in spots. True, industry in orbit and power from orbit have helped, and both Lagrange 4 and 5 have self-supporting populations. Anybody who invested in space stations early enough made a pile.
Including Pop, Zebediah.
But these are minor compared with what can be done, and this planet is in worse shape each year. Jake's six-dimensional principle can change that.
Move people into another universe? Would they go?
We weren't thinking of that, Hilda. We're trying to apply Clark's Law.
I don't recall it. Maybe it was while I was out with Mumps.
Arthur C. Clarke,
Pop told her.
Great man. Too bad he was liquidated in the Purge. Clarke defined how to make a great discovery or create a key invention. Study what the most respected authorities agree cannot be done. Then do it. My Continuacraft is a godchild of Clark, via his law. His insight inspired my treatment of six-dimensional continua. But this morning, Zeb added corollaries.
Jake, don't kid the ladies. I asked a question. You grabbed the ball and ran.
We heterodyned. Hilda, you know that the time-space traveler doesn't require power.
I'm afraid I don't know, darling man. Why were you installing power packs in Gay Deceiver?
Auxiliary uses, so that you won't have to cook over an open fire, for example. But the pretzel bender doesn't use power,
agreed Zebediah.
Don't ask why. I did, and Jake started writing equations in Sanskrit, and I got a headache.
It doesn't use power, Aunt Hilda, I agreed. Just parasitic power. A few microwatts so that the gyros never slow down, milliwatts for instrument readouts and for controls, but the widget itself uses none.
What happened to the law of conservation of energy?
Sharpie,
my husband answered.
As a fairish mechanic, an amateur electron pusher, and as a bloke who has herded unlikely junk through the sky, I never worry about theory as long as machinery does what it's supposed to do. I worry when a machine turns and bites me. That's why I specialize in fail-safes and backups and triple redundancy. I try never to get a machine sore at me. There's no theory for that, but every engineer knows it. Hilda, my beloved, the law of conservation of mass, energy, is not broken by our Continuacraft. It is simply not relevant to it. Once Zeb understood that, I didn't say I understood it. Well, once Zeb stipulated that, he raised interesting questions. For example, Jupiter doesn't need Ganymede. Whereas Venus does, although Titan might be better.
Possible.
Yes, make an inhabitable base more quickly. But the urgent problem, Jake, is to seed Venus, move atmosphere to Mars, put both of them through forced aging, then respot them. Earth-Sol Trojan points?
Certainly. We've had millions of years of evolution this distance from the sun.
We had best plan on living neither closer nor farther, with careful attention to stratospheric protection. But I still have doubts about anchoring in the Venerian crust. We wouldn't want to lose the planet on Tau axis. Mere R&D, Jake. Calculate pressures and temperatures. Beef up the vehicle accordingly. Spherical, save for exterior anchors. Then apply a jigger factor of 4. With automatic controls, quintuply redundant. Catch it when it comes out and steady it down in Earth's orbit, 60 degrees trailing, and start selling subdivisions the size of old Spanish land grants. Jake, we should gather enough mass to create new Earths at all Trojan points, a hexagon around the sun. 5 brand new Earths would give the race room enough to breed. On this maiden voyage, let's keep our eyes open.
Aunt Hilda looked at Zebediah with horror. Zebby! Creating planets, indeed!
Stepmother-in-law, these things Jake and I have been discussing are practical. Once we thought about the fact that the space-time twister uses no power. Move anything, anywhere. All spaces, all times. I add the plural because at first I could not see what Jake had in mind when he spoke of forced aging of a planet. Rotate Venus into the Tau axis. Fetch it back along Te axis. Reinsert it centuries or millennia older at this point in T-axis. Perhaps translated a year or so into the future, our future, so as to be ready for it when it returns. All sweet and green and beautiful and ready to grow children and puppies and butterflies. Terraformed, but virginal.
A bit later, Zebediah sprawled out, looked up over the fireplace.
Pop, you were in the Navy?
No, Army, if you count Chairborne Infantry. They handed me a commission for having a doctorate in mathematics, told me they needed me for ballistics. Then I spent my whole tour as a personnel officer, signing papers.
Standard operating procedure. That's a Navy sword and belt up there. Thought it might be yours.
It's Dee Dee's. Belonged to Jane's grandfather Rogers. I have a dress saber. Belonged to my dad, who gave it to me when the Army took me. Dress blues, too. I took some with me. Never had occasion to wear either.
Pop got up and went into his, there, bedroom, calling back,
I'll show you the saber.
My husband said to me,
Dee Dee, would you mind my handling your sword?
My captain, that sword is yours.
Heavens, dear, I can't accept an heirloom.
If my warlord will not permit his princess to gift him with a sword, he can leave it where it is. I've been wanting to give you a wedding present and did not realize that I had the perfect gift for Captain John Carter.
My apologies, Dejasaurus. I accept and will keep it bright. I will defend my princess with it against all enemies.
Helium is proud to accept. If you make a cradle of your hands, I can stand in them and reach it down. Zebediah grasped me, a hand above each knee, and I was suddenly 3 meters tall. Sword and belt were on hooks. I lifted them down, and myself was placed down. My husband stood straight while I buckled it around him. Then he dropped to one knee and kissed my hand. My husband is mad north-northwest, but his madness suits me. I got tears in my eyes, which Dee Dee doesn't do much, but Dejasaurus seems prone to, since John Carter made her his. Pop and Aunt Hilda watched, then imitated, including, I saw, tears in Hilda's eyes after she buckled on Pop's saber when he knelt and kissed her hand. Zebediah drew sword, tried its balance, sighted along its blade.
Handmade and balanced, close to the hilt. Dee Dee, your great-grandfather paid a pretty penny for this. It's an honest weapon.
I don't think he knew what it cost. It was presented to him.
For good reason, I feel certain.
Zebediah stood back, went into hanging guard, made fast moulinet vertically, left and right, then horizontally, clockwise and counterclockwise. Suddenly dropped into swordsman's guard, lunged and recovered, fast as a striking cat. I said softly to Pop, "Did you notice?" Pop answered quietly,
"No saber, sword too."
Hilda said loudly, Zebby, you never told me you went to Heidelberg.
You never asked, Sharpie. Around the Red Ox, they called me the Scourge of the Necker.
What happened to your scars?
Never got any, dear. I hung around an extra year, hoping for one, but no one got through my guard, ever. Hate to think about how many German faces I carved into checkerboards.
Zebediah, was that where you took your doctorate?
My husband grinned and sat down, still wearing sword.
No, another school. MIT?
Inquired Pop.
Hardly. Pop, this should stay in the family. I undertook to prove that a man can get a doctorate from a major university without knowing anything and without adding anything whatever to human knowledge. I think you have a degree in aerospace engineering,
Pop said flatly.
I'll concede that I have the requisite hours. I hold 2 degrees, a baccalaureate in humane arts, meaning I squeaked through, and a doctorate from an old and prestigious school, a PhD in education.
Zebediah, you wouldn't!
I was horrified.
But I did, Dee Dee, to prove that degrees, per se, are worthless. Often they are honorifics of true scientists, or learned scholars, or inspired teachers. Much more frequently, they are false faces for overeducated jackasses.
Pop said,
You'll get no argument from me, Zeb. A doctorate is a union card to get a tenured job. It does not mean that the holder thereof is wise or learned. Yes, sir. I was taught it at my grandfather's knee, my grandfather Zachariah, the man responsible for the initial Z in the names of his male descendants. Dee Dee, his influence on me was so strong that I must explain him. No, that's impossible. I must tell about him in order to explain me, and how I happened to take a worthless degree.
Hilda said, Dee Dee, he's pulling a longbow again.
Quiet, woman! Get thee to a nunnery, go!
I don't take orders from my step-son-in-law. Make that a monastery and I'll consider it. I kept my blinkin' mouth shut. My husband's fibs entertained me, if they were fibs.
Grandpa Zach was as cantankerous an old coot as you'll ever meet. Hated government, hated lawyers, hated civil servants, hated preachers, hated automobiles, public schools, and telephones. Was contemptuous of most editors, most writers, most professors. Most of almost anything. But he overtipped waitresses and porters and would go out of his way to avoid stepping on an insect. Grandpa had 3 doctorates, biochemistry, medicine, and law, and he regarded anyone who couldn't read Latin, Greek, Hebrew, French, and German as illiterate.
Zebby, can you read all those?
Fortunately for me, my grandfather had a stroke while filling out a tax form before he could ask me that question. I don't know Hebrew. I can read Latin, puzzle out Greek, speak and read French, read technical German, understand it in some accents, swear in Russian, very useful, and speak an ungrammatical smattering of Spanish picked up in cantinas and from horizontal dictionaries. Grandpa would have classed me as subliterate, as I don't do any of these well, and I sometimes split infinitives, which would have infuriated him. He practiced forensic medicine, medical jurisprudence, was an expert witness in toxicology, pathology, and traumatology, bullied judges, terrorized lawyers, medical students, and law students. He once threw a tax assessor out of his office and required him to return with a search warrant setting forth in detail its constitutional limitations. He regarded the income tax and the 17th Amendment and the direct primary as signs of the decay of the republic.
How did he feel about the 19th?
Hilda, Grandpa Zach supported female suffrage. I remember hearing him say that if women were so dad-burned foolish as to want to assume the burden, they should be allowed to. They couldn't do the country more harm than men had. Votes for women didn't annoy him, but 9,000 other things did. He lived at a slow simmer, always ready to break into a rolling boil. He had one hobby, collecting steel engravings.
Steel engravings? I repeated.
Of dead presidents, my princess. Especially of McKinley, Cleveland, and Madison. But he didn't scorn those of Washington. He had that instinct for timing so necessary to a collector. In 1929, on Black Thursday, he held not one share of common stock. Instead, he had sold short. When the 1933 bank holiday came along, every old dollar he owned, except current cash, was in Zurich in Swiss money. Eventually, U.S. citizens were forbidden by emergency decree to own gold even abroad. Grandpa Zach ducked into Canada, applied for Swiss citizenship, got it, and thereafter split his time between Europe and America, immune to inflation and the confiscatory laws that eventually caused us to knock 3 zeros off the old dollar in creating the new dollar. So he died rich in Locarno. Beautiful place. I stayed with him 2 summers as a boy. His will was probated in Switzerland, and the U.S. Revenue Service could not touch it. Most of it was a trust, with its nature known to his offspring before his death, or I would not have been named Zebediah. Female descendants got pro rata shares of income with no strings attached, but males had to have first names starting with Z, and even that got them not one Swiss franc. There was a root hog or die clause. Zachariah believed in taking care of daughters, but sons and grandsons had to go out and scratch with no help from their fathers until they had earned and saved on their own, or accumulated without going to jail, assets equal to one pro rata share of the capital sum of the trust before they shared in the trust's income.
"Sexism," said Aunt Hilda. "Raw, unadulterated sexism. Any femme lib gal would sneer at his dirty old money on those terms."
"Would you have refused it, Sharpie?"
"Me? Zebby, dear, are you feverish? I would have both greedy hands out. I'm strong for women's rights, but no fanatic. Sharpie wants to be pampered, and that's what men are best at, their natural function."
"Pop, do you need help in coping with her?"
"No, son, I like pampering Hilda. I don't see you abusing my daughter."
"I don't dare. You told me she's vicious at karate."
"I am good at karate. Pop made sure that I learned all the dirty fighting possible."
On my graduation from high school, my father had a talk with me. "Zeb," he told me, "the time has come. I'll put you through any school you choose. Or you can take what you have saved, strike out on your own, and try to qualify for a share in your grandfather's will. Suit yourself. I shan't influence you." Folks, I had to think. My father's younger brother was past 40 and still hadn't qualified. The size of the trust made a pro rata of its assets amount to a requirement that a male descendant had to get rich on his own, well-to-do at least, whereupon he was suddenly twice as rich. But with over half of this country's population living on the taxes of the lesser number, it is not as easy to get rich as it was in Grandpa's day. Turn down a paid-for education at Princeton or MIT, or go out and try to get rich with nothing but a high school education. I hadn't learned much in high school. I had majored in girls. So I had to think hard and long, almost 10 seconds. I left home next day with one suitcase and a pitiful sum of money. Wound up on campus that had two things to recommend it: an aerospace ROTC that would pick up part of my expenses, and a phys ed department willing to award me a jockstrap scholarship in exchange for daily bruises and contusions, plus all-out effort whenever we played. I took the deal.
"What did you play?"
asked my father.
"Football, basketball, and track. They would have demanded more had they been able to figure a way to do it."
"I had thought you were going to mention fencing."
"No, that's another story." These did not quite close the gap, so I also waited tables for meals, food so bad the cockroaches ate out. But that closed the gap, and I added to it by tutoring in mathematics. That gave me my start toward piling up money to qualify.
I asked, "Did tutoring math pay enough to matter? I tutored math before Mama died. The hourly rate was low."
"Not that sort of tutoring, Princess. I taught prosperous young optimists not to draw to inside straights, and that stud poker is not a game of chance, but that craps is, controlled by mathematical laws that cannot be flouted with impunity. To quote Grandfather Zachariah, a man who bets on greed and dishonesty won't be wrong too often. There is an amazingly high percentage of greedy people, and it is even easier to win from a dishonest gambler than it is from an honest one. And neither is likely to know the odds at craps, especially side bets, or all of the odds in poker, in particular how odds change according to the number of players, where one is seated in relation to the dealer, and how to calculate changes as cards are exposed in stud. That was also how I quit drinking, my darling, except for special celebrations. In every friendly game, some players contribute, some take a profit. A player determined to take a profit must be neither drunk nor tired. Pop, the shadows are growing long. I don't think anybody wants to know how I got a worthless doctorate.
I do, I put in.
Me too, echoed Aunt Hilda.
Son, you're outvoted. Okay, 2 years active duty after I graduated. Sky jockeys are even more optimistic than students and have more money. Meanwhile, I learned more math and engineering. Was sent inactive just in time to be called up again for the spasm war. Didn't get hurt. I was safer than civilians. But that kept me on another year, even though fighting was mostly over before I reported in. That made me a veteran with benefits. I went to Manhattan and signed up for school again. Doctoral candidate. School of Education. Not serious at first, simply intending to use my veterans' benefits while enjoying the benefits of being a student, and devote most of my time to piling up cash to qualify for the trust. I knew that the stupidest students, the silliest professors, and the worst bull courses are concentrated in schools of education. By signing for large class evening lectures and the unpopular 8 a.m. classes, I figured I could spend most of my time finding out how the stock market ticked. I did, by working there, before I risked a dime. Eventually, I had to pick a research problem or give up the advantages of being a student. I was sick of a school in which the pie was all meringue and no filling, but I stuck, as I knew how to cope within which the answers are matters of opinion, and the opinion that counts is that of the professor, and how to cope with those large class evening lectures. Buy the lecture notes. Read everything that professor ever published. Don't cut too often, and when you do show up, get there early, sit front row center. Be certain the prof catches your eye every time he looks your way, by never taking your eyes off him. Ask one question you know he can answer because you've picked it out of his published papers, and state your name in asking a question. Luckily, Zebediah Carter is a name easy to remember. Family, I got straight A's in both required courses and seminars, because I did not study education. I studied professors of education. But I still had to make that original contribution to human knowledge, without which a candidate may not be awarded a doctor's degree in most so-called disciplines, and the few that don't require it are a tough row to hoe. I studied my faculty committee before letting myself be tied down to a research problem, not only reading everything each had published, but also buying their publications or paying the library to make copies of out-of-print papers.
My husband took me by my shoulders.
Deja Thoris, here follows the title of my dissertation. You can have your divorce on your own terms.
Zebediah, don't talk that way.
Then brace yourself. An ad hoc inquiry concerning the optimization of the infrastructure of primary educational institutions at the interface between administration and instruction, with special attention to group dynamics desiderata.
Zebby, what does that mean?
It means nothing, Hilda. Zeb, quit kidding our ladies. Such a title would never be accepted. Jake, it seems certain that you have never taken a course in a school of education.
Well, no. Teaching credentials are not required at university level, but...
But me no buts, Pop. I have a copy of my dissertation. You can check its authenticity. While that paper totally lacks meaning, it is a literary gem, in the sense in which a successful forging of an old master is itself a work of art. It is loaded with buzzwords. The average length of sentences is 81 words. The average word length, discounting of, a, the, and other syntactical particles, is 11 plus letters in slightly under 4 syllables. The bibliography is longer than the dissertation and cites 3 papers of each member of my committee and 4 of the chairman. And those citations are quoted in part, while avoiding any mention of matters on which I knew that members of the committee held divergent but equally stupid opinions. But the best touch was to get permission to do fieldwork in Europe and have it count toward time on campus. Half the citations were in foreign languages, ranging from Finnish to Croatian, and the translated bits invariably agreed with the prejudices of my committee. It took careful quoting out of context to achieve this, but it had the advantage that the papers were unlikely to be on campus, and my committee were not likely to go to the trouble of looking them up even if they were. Most of them weren't at home in other languages, even easy ones like French, German, and Spanish. But I did not waste time on phony fieldwork. I simply wanted a trip to Europe at student airfares and the use of student hostels. Dirt cheap way to travel. And a visit to the trustees of Grandpa's fund. Good news. The fund was blue chips and AAA bonds. And at that time, speculative stocks were rising. So the current cash value of the fund was down, even though income was up. And two more of my cousins and one uncle had qualified, again reducing the pro rata. So, glory be, I was within reaching distance. I had brought with me all that I had saved, swore before a notary that it was all mine, nothing borrowed, nothing from my father, and left it on deposit in Zurich, using the trustees as a front. And I told them about my stamp and coin collection. Good stamps and coins never go down, always up. I had nothing but proof sets, first day covers, and unbroken sheets, all in perfect condition, and had a notarized inventory and appraisal with me. The trustees got me to swear that the items I had collected before I left home had come from earned money. True, the earliest items represented mowed lawns and such, and agreed to hold the pro rata at that day's cash value, lower if the trend continued, if I would sell my collection and send a draft to Zurich with businesslike speed as soon as I returned to the States. I agreed. One trustee took me to lunch, tried to get me liquored up, then offered me 10% over appraisal if I would sell that very afternoon, then send it to him by courier at his expense. Bonded couriers go back and forth between Europe and America every week. We shook hands on it, went back and consulted the other trustees. I signed papers transferring title. The trustee buying signed his draft to me. I endorsed it to the trustees to add to the cash I was leaving in their custody. 3 weeks later, I got a cable certifying that the collection matched the inventory. I had qualified. 5 months later, I was awarded the degree of Doctor of Philosophy, summa cum laude. And that, dear ones, is the shameful story of my life. Anyone have the energy to go swimming? Son, if there is a word of truth in that, it is indeed a shameful story.
Pop, that's not fair. Zebediah used their rules and outsmarted them.
I didn't say that Zeb had anything to be ashamed of. It is a commentary on American higher education. What Zeb claims to have written is no worse than trash I know is accepted as dissertations these days. His case is the only one I have encountered wherein an intelligent and able scholar, you, Zeb, set out to show that an earned PhD could be obtained from a famous institution, I know which one, in exchange for deliberately meaningless pseudo-research. The cases I have encountered have involved button counting by stupid and humorless young persons under the supervision of stupid and humorless old fools. I see no way to stop it. The rot is too deep. The only answer is to chuck the system and start over.
My father shrugged.
Impossible.
Zebby, Aunt Hilda interjected, what do you do on campus? I've never asked. My husband grinned.
Oh, much what you do, Sharpie.
I don't do anything. Enjoy myself.
Me too. If you look, you will find me listed as research professor in residence. An examination of the university's books would show that I am paid a stipend to match my rank. Further search would show that slightly more than that amount is paid by some trustees in Zurich to the university's general fund, as long as I remain on campus, a condition not written down. I like being on campus, Sharpie. It gives me privileges not granted the barbarians outside the pale. I teach a course occasionally, as supply for someone on sabbatical or ill.
Huh? What courses? What departments?
Any department but education. Engineering mathematics, physics 101, thermogoddamics, machine elements, saber and dueling sword, swimming and, don't laugh, English poetry from Chaucer through the Elizabethans. I enjoy teaching something worth teaching. I don't charge for courses I teach. The chancellor and I understand each other.
I'm not sure I understand you, I said. But I love you anyhow. Let's go swimming.
10. Zebediah. Before heading for the pool, our wives argued over how Barsoomian warriors dress, a debate complicated by the fact that I was the only one fairly sober. While I was telling my shameful story, Jake had refreshed his scotch on rocks and was genially argumentative. Our brides had stuck to one highball each, but while one jigger gave Dee Dee a happy glow, Sharpie's mass is so slight that the same dosage made her squiffed. Jake and I agreed to wear sidearms. Our princesses had buckled them on. We would wear them. But Dee Dee wanted me to take off the grease-stained shorts I had worn while working.
Captain John Carter never wears clothes. He arrived on Barsoom naked and from then on never wore anything but the leather and weapons of a fighting man. Jeweled leather for state occasions, plain leather for fighting, and sleeping silks at night. Barsoomians don't wear clothes. When John Carter first laid eyes on Deja Thoris, Dee Dee closed her eyes and recited, she was as destitute of clothes as the green Martians. Save for her highly wrought ornaments, she was entirely naked. Dee Dee opened her eyes, stared solemnly. The women never wear clothes, just jewelry.
Pretty chilly, said her father with a belch. Excuse me.
When they were chilly, they wrapped furs around them, Pop. I mean, Moore's, Kajak, my revered father.
Jake answered with slow precision.
Not chilly, silly. With a clash of blades and flash of steel, man doesn't want family treasures swinging in the breeze and banging his knees. Distracts him. Might get him sliced off. Correct, Captain John Carter?
Logical, I agreed.
Besides, illustrations showed men wearing breech clouts, probably steel jockstrap underneath. I would.
Those pictures were painted early in the 20th century, Pop. Censored. But the stories make it clear. Weapons for men, jewelry for women, furs for cold weather.
I know how I should dress, put in Sharpie.
Thuvia wears jewels on bits of gauze. I remember the book cover. Not clothes, just something to fasten jewels to. Dee Dee, Deja Thoris, I mean, do you have a gauze scarf I can use? Fortunately, I was wearing pearls when Moore's Kajak kidnapped me.
Sharpie, I objected. You can't be Thuvia. She married Kartoris. Moore's Kajak, or Moore's Kajake, might be a misspelling, is your husband.
Certainly, Moore's Jake is my husband, but I'm his second wife. That explains everything. But it ill becomes the warlord to address a princess of the House of Ptarth as Sharpie.
Mrs. Burroughs drew herself up to her full 152 centimeters and tried to look offended. My humble apologies, Your Highness. Sharpie giggled.
Can't stay mad at our warlord. Deja Thoris, hun. Green tulle? Blue? Anything but white. I'll go look.
Ladies, I objected. If we don't get moving, the pool will cool off. You can sew on pearls this evening. Anyhow, where do pearls come from on Barsoom? Dead sea bottoms? No oysters?
From Chorus, the lost sea of Dor, Dee Dee explained.
They've got you, son. But I either go swimming right now, or I have another drink, and then another, and then another. Working too hard, too tense. Too much worry.
Okay, Pop. We swim. Aunt Thuvia? All right, Deja Thoris, to save Mors Jacob from himself, but I won't wear earthling clothes. You can have my mink cape. Maybe Chili coming back.
Jake wrapped his sarong into a breech clout, strapped it in place with his saber belt. I replaced those grimy shorts with swim briefs, which Dee Dee conceded were almost Barsoomian. I was no longer dependent on Jake's clothes. My travel kit, always in my car once I got at it, supplied necessities from passport to poncho. Sharpie wore pearls and rings she had been wearing at her party, plus a scarf around her waist to which she attached all the costume jewelry Dee Dee could dig up. Dee Dee carried Hilda's mink cape, then wrapped it around her.
My captain, someday I want one like this.
I'll skin the minks personally, I promised her.
Oh dear, I think this is synthetic.
I don't. Ask Hilda.
I will most carefully not ask her, but I'll settle for synthetic.
I said, my beloved princess, you eat meat. Minks are vicious carnivores, and the ones used for fur are raised for no other purpose, not trapped. They are well treated, then killed humanely. If your ancestors had not killed for meat and fur as the last glaciation retreated, you would not be here. Illogical sentiment leads to the sort of tragedy you find in India and Bangladesh. Dee Dee was silent some moments as we followed Jake and Hilda down toward the pool.
My captain, Zebediah?
Yes, Dee Dee?
I am proud that you made me your wife. I will try to be a good wife. And your princess.
You do. You have. You always will. Deja Thoris, my princess and only love, until I met you, I was a boy playing with oversized toys. Today, I am a man, with a wife to protect and cherish, a child to plan for. I'm truly alive at last. Hey, what are you sniffling about? Stop it.
I'll cry if I feel like it.
Well, don't get it on Hilda's cape.
Give me a hanky.
I don't even have a Kleenex. I brushed away her tears with my fingers. Sniff hard. You can cry on me tonight, in bed.
Let's go to bed early.
Right after dinner. Sniffles all gone?
I think so. Do pregnant women always cry?
So I hear.
Well, I'm not going to do it again. No excuse for it. I'm terribly happy.
The Polynesians do something they call crying happy. Maybe that's what you do.
I guess so. But I'll save it for private.
Dee Dee started to shrug the cape off.
Too hot, lovely as it feels.
She stopped with the cape off her shoulders, suddenly pulled it around her again.
Who's coming up the hill?
I looked up, saw that Jake and Hilda had reached the pool, and a figure was appearing from below, beyond the boulder that dammed it. I don't know. Stay behind me. I hurried toward the pool. The stranger was dressed as a federal ranger. As I closed in, I heard the stranger say to Jake, Are you Jacob Burrows?
Why do you ask? Are you or aren't you? If you are, I have business with you. If you're not, you're trespassing. Federal land, restricted access.
Jake, I called out. Who is he? The newcomer turned his head.
Who are you?
Wrong sequence, I told him. You haven't identified yourself.
Don't be funny, the stranger said. You know this uniform. I'm Benny Highball, the ranger hereabouts.
I answered most carefully.
Mr. Highball, you are a man in a uniform wearing a gun belt and a shield. That doesn't make you a federal officer. Show your credentials and state your business.
The uniformed character sighed.
I got no time to listen to smart talk.
He rested his hand on the butt of his gun.
If one of you is Burroughs, speak up. I'm going to search this site and cabin. There's stuff coming up from Sonora. This sure as hell is the transfer point.
Dee Dee suddenly came out from behind me, moved quickly, and placed herself beside her father.
Where's your search warrant? Show your authority.
She had the cape clutched around her. Her face quivered with indignation.
Another joker.
This clown snapped open his holster. Federal land, here's my authority! Dee Dee suddenly dropped the cape, stood naked in front of him. I drew, lunged, and cut down in one motion, slashed the wrist, recovered, thrust upward from low line into the belly above the gun belt. As my point entered, Jake's saber cut the side of the neck almost to decapitation. Our target collapsed like a puppet with cut strings, lay by the pool, bleeding at three wounds.
Zebediah, I'm sorry.
About what, princess? I asked as I wiped my blade on the alleged ranger's uniform. I noticed the color of the blood with distaste.
He didn't react. I thought my strip act would give you more time.
You did distract him, I reassured her. He watched you and didn't watch me. Jake, what kind of a creature has bluish-green blood? I don't know. Sharpie came forward, squatted down, dabbed a finger in the blood, sniffed it.
Hemocyanin, I think, she said calmly. Dee Dee, you were right. Alien, the largest terrestrial fauna with that method of oxygen transport is a lobster, but this thing is no lobster. It's a black hat. How did you know? I didn't, but he didn't sound right. Rangers are polite, and they never fuss about showing their IDs.
I didn't know, I admitted. I wasn't suspicious, just annoyed. You moved mighty fast, Jake approved. I never know why till it's over. You didn't waste time yourself, Tavarich. Drawing saber while he was pulling a gun? That takes guts and speed. But let's not talk now. Where are his pals? We may be picked off getting back to the house.
Look at his pants, Hilda suggested. He hasn't been on horseback, hasn't climbed far either. Jacob, is there a jeep trail?
No, this isn't accessible by jeep, just barely by horse. Hasn't been anything overhead, I added. No chopper, no air car.
Continue a craft, said Dee Dee.
Huh?
Zebediah, the black hats are aliens who don't want Pop to build a time-space machine. We know that, so it follows that they have continua craft. QED.
I thought about it. Dee Dee, I'm going to bring you breakfast in bed. Jake, how do we spot an alien continua craft? It doesn't have to look like Gay Deceiver. Jake frowned. No. Any shape, but a one-passenger craft might not be much larger than a phone booth. If it's a one-man, one-alien job, it should be parked down in that scrub, I said, pointing. We can find it.
Zebediah, protested Dee Dee. We don't have time to search. We ought to get out of here, fast.
Jake said, My daughter is right, but not for that reason. Its craft is not necessarily waiting. It could be parked an infinitesimal interval away along any of six axes and either return automatically, pre-programmed, or by some method of signaling that we can postulate but not describe. The alien craft would not be here now, but will be here later. For pickup. In that case, Jake, you and I and the gals should scram out of here, now to there, then. Be missing. How long has our pressure test been running? What time is it?
17:17, Dee Dee answered instantly.
I looked at my wife. Naked as a frog. Where do you hide your watch, dearest? Surely not there.
She stuck out her tongue. Smarty. I have a clock in my head. I never mention it because people give me funny looks.
Dee Dee does have innate time sense, agreed her father. Accurate to 13 seconds plus or minus, about 4 seconds. I've measured it.
I'm sorry, Zebediah. I don't mean to be a freak.
Sorry about what, princess? I'm impressed. What do you do about time zones?
Same as you do. Add or subtract as necessary. Darling, everyone has a built-in circadian. Mine is merely more nearly exact than most people's. Like having absolute pitch. Some do, some don't.
Are you a lightning calculator?
Yes, but computers are so much faster that I no longer do it much. Except one thing. I can sense a glitch, spot a wrong answer. Then I look for garbage in the program. If I don't find it, I send for a hardware specialist. Look, sweetheart, discuss my oddities later. Pop, let's dump that thing down the septic tank and go. I'm nervous, I am. Not so fast, Dee Dee. Hilda was still squatting by the corpse. Zebby, consult your hunches. Are we in danger?
Well, not this instant.
Good. I want to dissect this creature. Aunt Hilda, take a Milltown, Dee Dee. Gentlemen, the Bible, or somebody, said, know thy enemy. This is the only black hat we've seen, and he's not human and not born on Earth. There is a wealth of knowledge lying here, and it ought not to be shoved down a septic tank until we know more about it. Jacob, feel this.
Hilda's husband got down on his knees, let her guide his hand through the ranger's hair.
Feel those bumps, dearest?
Yes.
Much like the budding horns of a lamb, are they not?
Oh, and I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon.
I squatted down, felt for horn buds. Be damned. He did come up out of the earth, up this slope anyhow, and he spake as a dragon. Talked unfriendly, and all the dragons I've ever heard of talked mean or belched fire. Hilda, when you field strip this critter, keep an eye out for the number of the beast.
I shall. Who's going to help me get this specimen up to the house? I want 3 volunteers.
Dee Dee gave a deep sigh.
I volunteer. Aunt Hilda, must you do this?
Dee Dee.
It ought to be done at Johns Hopkins, with x-ray and proper tools and color holovision, but I'm the best biologist for it because I'm the only biologist. Honey, child, you don't have to watch. Aunt Sharpie has helped in an emergency room after a 5-car crash. To me, blood is just a mess to clean up. Green blood doesn't bother me even that much.
Dee Dee gulped.
I'll help carry. I said I would.
Deja Thoris?
Sir? Yes, my captain?
Back away from that. Take this, and this. I unbuckled sword and belt, shoved down my swimming briefs, handed all of it to Dee Dee. Jake, help me get him up into fireman's carry.
I'll help carry, son.
No, I can tote him easier than 2 could. Sharpie, where do you want to work?
It will have to be the dining table. Aunt Hilda, I don't want that thing on my... I beg your pardon, it's your dining table. You're forgiven, only if you'll concede that it is our dining table. Dee Dee, how many times must I repeat that I am not crowding you out of your home? We are co-housewives. My only seniority lies in being 20 years older. To my regret.
Hilda, my dear one, what would you say to a workbench in the garage with a drop cloth on it and floodlights over it?
I say swell. I don't think a dining table is the place for a dissection either, but I couldn't think of anywhere else.
With help from Jake, I got that damned carcass draped across my shoulders in fireman's carry. Dee Dee started up the path with me, carrying my belt and sword and my briefs in one arm so that she could hold my free hand, despite my warning that she might be splashed with alien blood.
No, Zebediah, I got overtaken by childishness. I won't let it happen again. I must conquer all squeamishness. I'll be changing diapers soon.
She was silent a moment.
That is the first time I've seen death. In a person, I mean. An alien humanoid person, I should say. But I thought he was a man. I once saw a puppy run over. I threw up, even though it was not my puppy and I didn't go close. She added, an adult should face up to death, should she not?
Face up to it, yes, I agreed. But not grow calloused. Dee Dee. I've seen too many men die. I've never grown inured to it. One must accept death, learn not to fear it, then never worry about it. Make today count, as a friend whose days are numbered told me. Live in that spirit, and when death comes, it will come as a welcome friend.
You say much what my mother told me before she died?
Your mother must have been an extraordinary woman. Dee Dee, in the 2 weeks I've known you, I've heard so much about her from all three of you that I feel as if I knew her. A friend I hadn't seen lately. She sounds like a wise woman.
I think she was, Zebediah. Certainly she was good. Sometimes, when I have a hard choice, I ask myself, what would Mama do? And everything falls into place.
Both good and wise, and her daughter shows it. How old are you, Dee Dee?
Does it matter, sir?
No. Curiosity.
I wrote my birth date on our marriage license application.
Beloved, my head was spinning so hard that I had trouble remembering my own. But I should not have asked. Women have birthdays, men have ages. I want to know your birthday. I have no need to know the year.
April 22nd, Zebediah. One day older than Shakespeare.
Age could not wither her. Woman, you carry your years well.
Thank you, sir.
That snoopy question came from having concluded in my mind that you were 26, figuring from the fact that you have a doctor's degree, although you look younger.
I think 26 is a satisfactory age.
I wasn't asking, I said hastily. I got confused from knowing Hilda's age, then hearing her say that she is, or claims to be, 20 years older than you. It did not jibe with my earlier estimate, based on your probable age on graduating from high school plus your 2 degrees. Jake and Hilda had lingered at the pool while Jake washed his hands and rinsed from his body smears of alien ichor. Being less burdened, they climbed the path faster than we and came up behind us just as Dee Dee answered,
Zebediah, I never graduated from high school.
Oh, that's right, agreed her father. Dee Dee matriculated by taking college boards at 14. No problem, since she stayed home and didn't have to live in a dorm, got her BS in 3 years. And that was a happy thing, as Jane lived to see Dee Dee move the tassel from one side of her mortarboard to the other. Jane in a wheelchair and happy as a child. Her doctor said it couldn't hurt her, meaning she was dying anyhow. He added, had her mother been granted only 3 more years, she could have seen Dee Dee's doctorate conferred 2 years ago.
Pop, sometimes you chatter.
Did I say something out of line? No, Jake, I assured him. But I've just learned that I robbed the cradle. I knew I had, but hadn't realized how much. Dee Dee, darling, you are 22.
Is 22 an unsatisfactory age?
No, my princess. Just right.
My captain said that women have birthdays while men have ages. Is it permitted to inquire your age, sir? I didn't pay close attention to that form we had to fill out either.
I answered solemnly. But Deja Thoris knows that Captain John Carter is centuries old, cannot recall his childhood, and has always looked 30 years old.
Zebediah, if that is your age, you've had a busy 30 years. You said you left home when you graduated from high school, worked your way through college, spent 3 years on active duty, then worked your way through a doctor's degree.
A phony one.
That doesn't reduce required residence. And Hilda says you've been a professor 4 years.
Will you settle for 9 years older than you are?
I'll settle for whatever you say.
He's at it again, put in Sharpie. He was run off 2 other campuses, co-ed scandals. Then he found that in California nobody cared, so he moved west.
I tried to look hurt. Sharpie, darling, I always married them. One gal turned out already to be married, and in the other case, the child wasn't mine. She slipped one over on me.
The truth isn't in him, Dee Dee, but he's brave, and he bathes every day, and he's rich. And we love him anyhow.
The truth isn't in you either, Aunt Hilda, but we love you anyhow. It says in Little Women that a bride should be half her husband's age plus 7 years. Zebediah and I hit close to that.
A rule that makes an old hag out of me. Jacob, I'm just Zebby's age, 31. But we've both been 31 for ages.
I'll bet he does feel aged after carrying that thing uphill. Atlas, can you support your burden while I get the garage open, a bench dragged out and covered? Or shall I help you put it down?
I'd just have to pick it up again. But don't dally.
11. Zebediah. I felt better after I got that ranger's corpse dumped and the garage door closed, everyone indoors. I had told Hilda that I felt no immediate danger, but my wild talent does not warn me until the moment of truth. The blokes in the black hats had us located, or possibly had never lost us. What applies to human gangsters has little to do with aliens whose powers and motives and plans we had no way to guess. We might be as naive as a kitten who thinks he is hidden because his head is, unaware that his little rump sticks out. They were alien. They were powerful. They were multiple. 3,000? 3 million? We didn't know the number of the beast, and they knew where we were. True, we had killed one. By luck, not by planning. That ranger would be missed. We could expect more to call in force. Foolhardiness has never appealed to me. Given a chance to run, I run. I don't mean I'll bug out on a wingmate when the unfriendlies show up, and certainly not on a wife and unborn child, but I wanted us all to run. Me, my wife, my blood brother, who was also my father-in-law, and his wife, my chum Sharpie, who was brave, practical, smart, and unsqueamish. That she would joke in the jaws of Moloch was not a fault, but a source of esprit. I wanted us to go. Tau axis, te axis, rotate, translate, whatever. Anywhere not infested by gruesomes with green gore. I checked the gauge and felt better. Gay's inner pressure had not dropped. Too much to expect Gay to be a spaceship, not equipped to scavenge and replenish air, but it was pleasant to know that she would hold pressure much longer than it would take us to scram for home if we had to, assuming that unfriendlies had not shot holes in her graceful shell. I went by the inside passageway into the cabin, used soap and hot water, rinsed off and did it again, dried down and felt clean enough to kiss my wife, which I did. Dee Dee held on to me and reported.
Your kit is packed, sir. I'm finishing mine, the planned weight and space, and nothing but practical clothes.
Sweetheart?
Yes, Zebediah?
Take the clothes you were married in and mine too, same for Jake and Hilda, and your father's dress uniform. Or was it burned in Logan?
But Zebediah, you emphasized rugged clothes.
So I did, to keep your mind on the fact that we can't guess the conditions we'll encounter and don't know how long we'll be gone or if we'll be back. So I listed everything that might be useful in pioneering a virgin planet, since we might be stranded and never get home. Everything from Jake's microscope and water testing gear to technical manuals and tools, and weapons, and flea powder. But it's possible that we will have to play the roles of ambassadors for humanity at the court of His Extreme Majesty, Overlord of Galactic Empires in the 1000th and 3rd Continuum. We may need the gaudiest clothes we can whip up. We don't know. We can't guess.
I'd rather pioneer.
We may not have a choice. When you were figuring weights, do you recall spaces marked assigned mass such and such, list to come?
Certainly. Total exactly 100 kilos, which seemed odd. Space slightly less than 1 cubic meter split into crannies.
Those are yours, Snubnose, and Pop or Hilda. Mass can be up to 50% over. I'll tell Gay to trim to match. Got an old doll, a security blanket, a favorite book of poems, scrapbook, family photographs? Bring them all.
Golly.
I never enjoy looking at my wife quite so much as when she lights up and is suddenly a little girl. Don't leave space for me. I have only what I arrived with. What about shoes for Hilda?
She claims she doesn't need any, Zebediah, that her calluses are getting calluses on them. But I've worked out expedients. I got Pop some Dr. Scholl's shoe liners when we were building. I have 3 pairs left and can trim them. Liners and enough bobby socks make her size 3.5 feet fit my clodhoppers pretty well. And I have a sentimental keepsake. Keds Pop bought me when I first went to summer camp at 10. They fit Aunt Hilda.
Good girl, I added. You seem to have everything in hand. How about food? Not stores we are carrying, I mean now. Has anybody thought about dinner? Killing aliens makes me hungry.
Buffet style, Zebediah. Sandwiches and stuff on the kitchen counter, and I thawed and heated an apple pie. I fed one sandwich to Hilda, holding it for her. She says she's going to finish working, then scrub before she eats anything more.
Sharpie munched a sandwich while she carved that thing?
Aunt Hilda is rugged, Zebediah. Almost as rugged as you are.
More rugged than I am. I could do an autopsy if I had to. But not while eating. I think I speak for Jake, too.
I know you speak for Pop. He saw me feeding her, turned green, and went elsewhere. Go look at what she's been doing, Zebediah. Hilda has found interesting things.
Are you the little girl who had a tizzy at the idea of dissecting a dead alien?
No, sir, I am not. I've decided to stay grown up. It's not easy, but it's more satisfying. An adult doesn't panic at a snake. She just checks to see if it's got rattles. I'll never squeal again. I'm grown up at last. A wife instead of a pampered princess.
You will always be my princess.
I hope so, my chieftain. But to merit that, I must learn to be a pioneer mother. Wring the neck of a rooster, butcher a hog, load while my husband shoots, take his place and his rifle when he is wounded. I'll learn. I'm stubborn, I am. Grab a hunk of pie and go see Hilda. I know just what to do with the extra 100 kilos. Books, photographs, Pop's microfilm files and portable viewer, Pop's rifle and a case of ammo that the weight schedule didn't allow for.
Didn't know he had it. What caliber?
7.62 millimeters, long cartridge.
Glory be. Pop and I use the same ammo.
Didn't know you carried a rifle, Zebediah.
I don't advertise it. It's unlicensed. I must show all of you how to get at it.
Got any use for a lady's purse gun? A needle gun? Skoda flechettes? Not much range, but either they poison or they break up and expand, and it fires 90 times on one magazine.
What are you, Dee Dee? Honorable Hatchet Man?
No, sir. Pop got it for me, black market, when I started working nights. He said he would rather hire shysters to get me acquitted, or maybe probation, than to have to go down to the morgue to identify my body. Haven't had to use it. In Logan, I hardly need it. Zebediah, Pop has gone to a great deal of trouble to get me the best possible training in self-defense. He's just as highly trained. That's why I keep him out of fistfights, because it would be a massacre. He and Mama decided this when I was a baby. Pop says cops and courts no longer protect citizens, so citizens must protect themselves.
I'm afraid he's right.
My husband, I can't evaluate my opinions of right and wrong because I learned them from my parents and haven't lived long enough to have formed opinions in disagreement with theirs.
Dee Dee, your parents did okay.
I think so, but that's subjective. As may be, I was kept out of blackboard jungles, public schools, until we moved to Utah. And I was trained to fight, armed or unarmed. Pop and I noticed how you handled a sword. Your moulinets are like clockwork. And when you drop into point guard, your forearm is perfectly covered.
Jake is no slouch. He drew so fast I never saw it, and cut precisely above the collar.
Pop says you are better at it.
Longer reach. He's probably faster. Dee Dee, the best swordmaster I ever had was your height and reach. I couldn't even cross blades with him unless he allowed me to.
You never did say where you had taken up swordsmanship.
I grinned down at her. YMCA in downtown Manhattan. I had foil in high school. I fiddled with saber and épée in college. But I never encountered swordsmen until I moved to Manhattan. Took it up because I was getting soft. Then, during that so-called research trip in Europe, I met swordsmen with family tradition, sons and grandsons and great-grandsons of maître d'armes. Learned that it was a way of life, and I had started too late. Dee Dee, I fibbed to Hilda. I've never fought a student duel, but I did train in Saber in Heidelberg under the Zabelmeister, reputed to coach one underground corps. He was the little guy I couldn't cross steel with. Fast. Up to then, I had thought I was fast. But I got faster under his tutelage. The day I was leaving, he told me that he wished he had had me 20 years sooner. He might have made a swordsman of me.
You were fast enough this afternoon.
No, Didi. You had his eye. I attacked from the flank. You won that fight. Not me. Not Pop. Although what Pop did was far more dangerous than what I did.
My captain, I will not let you disparage yourself. I cannot hear you.
Women, bless their warm hearts and strange minds. Didi had appointed me her hero. That settled it. I would have to try to measure up. I cut a piece of apple pie, ate it quickly while I walked slowly through the passage into the garage, didn't want to reach the morgue, still eating. The ranger was on its back with clothes cut away, open from chin to crotch, and spread. Nameless chunks of gizzard were here and there around the cadaver. It gave off a fetid odor. Hilda was still carving, ice tongs in left hand, knife in her right, greenish goo up over her wrists. As I approached, she put down the knife, picked up a razor blade, did not look up until I spoke. Learning things, Sharpie? She put down her tools, wiped her hands on a towel, pushed back her hair with her forearm.
Zebby, you wouldn't believe it.
Try me.
Well, look at this.
She touched the corpse's right leg and spoke to the corpse itself.
What's a nice joint like this doing in a girl like you?
I saw what she meant. A long, gaunt leg with an extra knee lower than the human knee. It bent backward. Looking higher, I saw that its arms had similar extra articulation. Did you say girl?
I said girl. Zebby, this monster is either female or hermaphroditic. A fully developed uterus, two horned, like a cat, one ovary above each horn. But there appear to be testes lower down, and a dingus that may be a retractable phallus. Female, but probably male as well. Bisexual, but does not impregnate itself. The plumbing wouldn't hook up. I think these critters can both pitch and catch.
Taking turns, or simultaneously?
Wouldn't that be something? No, for mechanical reasons, I think they take turns. Whether 10 minutes apart or 10 years, deponent saith not. But I'd give a pretty to see two of them going to it.
Sharpie, you've got a one-track mind.
It's the main track. Reproduction is the main track. The methods and mores of sexual copulation are the central feature of all higher developments of life.
You're ignoring money and television.
Piffle. All human activities, including scientific research, are either mating dances and care of the young, or the dismal sublimations of born losers in the only game in town. Don't try to kid, Sharpie. Zebby, I hate these monsters. They interfere with my plans. A rose-covered cottage, a baby in the crib, a pot roast in the oven, me in a gingham dress and my man coming down the lane after a hard day flunking freshmen, me with his slippers and his pipe and a dry martini waiting for him. Heaven! All else is vanity and vexation. 4 fully developed mammary glands but lacking the redundant fat characteristic of the human female. Except me, damn it. A double stomach, a single intestine, a 2-compartment heart that seems to pump by peristalsis rather than by beating. Chordate. I haven't examined the brain. I don't have a proper saw, but it must be as well developed as ours. Definitely humanoid, outrageously non-human. Don't knock over those bottles, they are specimens of body fluids.
What are these things?
Splints to conceal the unhuman articulation. Plastic surgery on the face, too, I'm pretty sure. And cheaters to reshape the skull. The hair is fake. These boojums don't have hair. Something like tattooing. Or maybe masking I haven't been able to peel off to make the face and other exposed skin look human instead of blue-green. Zeb? 7 to 2, a large number of missing persons have been used as guinea pigs before they worked out methods for this masquerade. Swoop. A flying saucer dips down and 2 more guinea pigs wind up in their laboratories.
There hasn't been a flying saucer scare in years.
Poetic license, dear. If they have space-time twisters, they can pop up anywhere, steal what they want, or replace a real human with a convincing fake and be gone like switching off a light.
This one couldn't get by very long. Rangers have to take physical examinations.
This one may be a rush job, prepared just for us. A permanent substitution might fool anything but an X-ray, and might fool even X-ray if the doctor giving the examination was one of them. A theory you might think about. Zebby, I must get to work. There is so much to learn and so little time. I can't learn a fraction of what this carcass could tell a real comparative biologist.
Can I help? I was not anxious to.
Well,
I haven't much to do until Jake and Dee Dee finish assembling the last of what they are going to take, so what can I do to help?
I could work twice as fast if you would take pictures. I have to stop to wipe my hands before I touch the camera.
I'm your boy, Sharpie. Just say what angle, distance, and when.
Hilda looked relieved.
Zebby, have I told you that I love you despite your gorilla appearance and idiot grin? Underneath, you have the soul of a cherub. I want a bath so badly I can taste it. Could be the last hot bath in a long time. And the bidet, the acme of civilized decadence. I've been afraid I would still be carving strange meat when Jacob said it was time to leave.
Carve away, dear. You'll get your bath. I picked up the camera, the one Jake used for record keeping. A Polaroid Stereo Instamatic. Self-focusing, automatic irising, automatic processing, the perfect camera for engineer or scientist who needs a running record. I took endless pictures while Hilda sweated away. Sharpie, doesn't it worry you to work with bare hands? You might catch the never-get-overs.
Zebby, if these critters could be killed by our bugs, they would have arrived here with no immunities and died quickly. They didn't. Therefore, it seems likely that we can't be hurt by their bugs. Radically different biochemistries.
It sounded logical, but I could not forget Kettering's law. Logic is an organized way of going wrong with confidence. Dee Dee appeared, set down a loaded hamper.
That's the last.
She had her hair up in a bath knot and was dressed solely in rubber gloves.
Hi, dearest. Aunt Hilda, I'm ready to help.
Not much you can do, Dee Dee, hun, unless you want to relieve Zebby. Dee Dee was staring at the corpse and did not look happy. Her nipples were down flat. Go take a bath, I told her. Scram.
Do I stink that badly?
You stink swell, honey girl. But Sharpie pointed out that this may be our last chance at soap and hot water in quite a while. I've promised her that we won't leave for Canopus and Points East until she has her bath. So get yours out of the way, then you can help me stow while she gets sanitary.
All right.
Dee Dee backed off and her nipples showed faintly. Not rigid, but she was feeling better. My darling keeps her feelings out of her face, mostly. But those pretty pink spigots are barometers of her morale.
Just a sec, Dee Dee, Hilda added. This afternoon you said he didn't react. What did you mean?
What I said. Strip in front of a man and he reacts, one way or another. Even if he tries to ignore it, his eyes give him away. But he didn't. Of course he's not a man, but I didn't know that when I tried to distract him.
I said, but he did notice you, Dee Dee, and that gave me my chance.
But only the way a dog or a horse or any animal will notice any movement. He noticed but ignored it. No reaction.
Zebby, does that remind you of anything?
Should it?
The first day we were here, you told us a story about a Zoftig co-ed.
I did.
She was flunking math.
Oh, Brainy.
Yes, Professor N. O'Harrit Brain. See any parallel?
But no brain has been on campus for years. Furthermore, he turns red in the face. Not a tattoo job.
I said this one might be a rush job. Would anyone be in a better position to discredit a mathematical theory than the head of the Department of Mathematics at a very prominent university, especially if he was familiar with that theory and knew that it was correct?
Hey, wait a minute, put in Dee Dee. Are you talking about that professor who argued with Pop? The one with the phony invitation? I thought he was just a stooge, Pop says he's a fool.
He behaves like a pompous old fool, agreed Hilda. I can't stand him. I plan to do an autopsy on him.
But he's not dead.
That can be corrected, Sharpie said sharply.
Hilda. By the time I was out of my bath, Jacob, Dee Dee, and Zebby had gay deceivers stowed and lists checked. Can opener, cameras, etc. Even samples of fluids and tissues from the cadaver, as Zebby's miracle car had a small refrigerator. Dee Dee wasn't happy about my specimens being in the refrigerator, but they were very well packed, layer on layer of plastic wrap, then sealed into a freezer box. Besides, that refrigerator contained mostly camera film, dynamite caps, and other non-eatables. Food was mostly freeze-dried and sealed in nitrogen, except foods that wouldn't spoil. We were dog-tired. Jacob moved that we sleep, then leave. Zeb, unless you expect a new attack in the next 8 hours, we should rest. I need to be clear-headed in handling verniers. This house is almost a fortress, will be pitch black, and does not radiate any part of the spectrum. They may conclude that we ran for it right after we got there.